I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And now we're going to bring back, after being absent last week, we're going to bring back everybody's favorite segment, and that's the mailbag segment. We turn it over to you for your questions. All right, so the first question here comes from @Dal_Cow, and he says, are Dorrance Armstrong, Dante Fowler, and Sam Williams all exclusively right-side players? Basham seems like a fringe 53 guy, but he's the only one I've seen rush from the left behind D-Law. So this is an interesting question to me, especially now that they moved Golston inside, because Golston was kind of a
primary left-handed player. Yeah,
he was kind of a
left-sided,
mini DeMarcus Lawrence.
Right.
You know, we've seen these guys mainly rush from the right. I think Fowler's exclusively right.
Right.
I would guess Dorrance Armstrong could play. I think just knowing Sam Williams' skill set, I think Sam Williams could play left if they needed to.
Well, I think so too, and I think I've seen him play left at Ole Miss. I asked Dorrance Armstrong that question today about playing left and right, which side he thought was his best side. And he says the majority of his life he's played on the left-hand side because he's been used to having to play against tight ends and tackles and stuff and take on running plays and things. And I'm like, well, has that affected you in any way? He says, no. He goes, I feel like, though, they want me to play more on the right side. He goes, and I don't have a problem with the right side. He goes, it's a different way to rush. But he goes, I've been primarily a left side player during my career. So, you know, if given the opportunity, I think you could use him. I think he would prefer to be a left side player, but don't be surprised as he continues to get work on the right side to see if he could be that guy as well.
Daniel Henshaw says, I know it's early, but did you see any evolution in Kellen Moore's play calling? Now, I will just say right off the bat, and I think I've referenced this before on the show, I think training camp is really tough to see any of that. A lot of that stuff that they're doing is done in install during the offseason, during practices that they don't let us see. The one thing I know we've talked about a little bit, not so much the play calling, but I think we are seeing slight evolutions in Tony Pollard's really been kind of lining up as a receiver more than a back at a lot of times. And you're seeing some of those pivot routes, those little whip routes that you know, have been kind of absent from the playbook during Kellen Moore's time. It looks like it's back in there this year with some of the routes the receivers are running. But overall, any takeaways for you from how Kellen Moore has looked like he's installing the offense?
No.
And don't say anything about a sluggo route.
No, I'm not at all because, well, you know, what I've noticed, though, is with the Kellen Moore, you mentioned the movement, the tighter the formation with CeeDee Lamb playing tight, working across the formation. You mentioned the pivot routes, things like that. The running game looks pretty much the same as far as the inside handoffs, the zone plays, the stuff like that that they want to use. Creativity-wise, I can't say that it's anything, you know, because, you know, you're looking at route combinations. They haven't made a whole lot of wow plays. You know, the wow plays that they've tried, Dak has missed on the overthrow on those deep balls.
He's been over or under.
Yeah.
And I think it's a function of still trying to figure out your chemistry with your receivers.
Exactly. You know, but down in the goal line, down the red zone, you know, defense I thought did a pretty good job. There was a couple of times, I think 2 days ago, where they had some red zone success. I think Washington had a catch.
Yep. Saturday.
Yeah, they've had the tight ends have made some plays, but it doesn't look like it's, you know, if you were really, really just looking at it overall, they haven't made a lot of those wild plays. And to me, wild plays are the ones of an evolution of, is he doing something that Dan Quinn in this defense isn't picking up? Is he confusing? Yeah. And it seems like to me, man, especially today, that defense was on point, but the receivers were able to make some great catches, and Dak made some really tough throws.
So I'm going to adjust this question a little bit from Randall Walker. His question is this. He says, you can choose any route to run and any receiver to run it to win the game for the Cowboys. Which and whom do you choose? And I don't think he's trolling me, but he says personally he'd take CeeDee Lamb on a sluggo. But because that could be you know a little wide, I'll go ahead and say you're at the 10. You're you know, last play of the game, you're at the 10-yard line. Brian, when you're looking at who are you targeting there and what route, I personally, and I know some people are going to hate to hear this, I think I'm looking for Schultz on some sort of option route.
Yeah, that's where – it was funny you say that because I was going through my head. The catch that Lamb made in the Minnesota game that one year was down
there. Yeah,
falling backwards and the way he was extending and all that. Last year, Amari Cooper had a great catch in the game and against Minnesota down in the red zone. If you had to tell me a guy to get open down there, I kind of feel like that Michael Gallup could go up and get a football for you if you had to. I don't necessarily want to throw 50-50 balls, but I think you're on to something with Schultz. I think Schultz would find space, especially if you put him on the backside, move the pocket, you know, send flow, those waggles, the boots, or have him, he's really good at lining up on the right side, everything going to the left,
clear out,
and then
stuff.
Clear, and then he comes over and he just kind of works his way through the trash to get to the, or works the back in line, you know, and kind of find space. I think the most reliable guy to throw the ball to down there in that red zone would be Schultz. Yeah. I think he would make the play
because I think he's somebody who's got strong hands. He's somebody who can make a catch with somebody on his back.
Yeah.
But I mean, like outside of just Schultz, I think Gallup is a good one. If you do have to throw a 50-50 ball, I think Gallup is probably the one I go with. But also, I think Gallup's got a really great ability. We've seen it a lot to do that toe drag on the side. So I feel like if you were, you know, running some sort of like corner or something like that, I think you could, you know,
hit him and let him get his feet.
So I think those are some of the routes I'd look at: a corner to Michael Gallup or some sort of
option
route to Schultz.
Something that starts on the right side and drags all the way across. I think those are the ones you would probably hit.
This question from Detarius Jones, and I had tweeted out something about this recently, so this is more, I think, based off of something that I said, and so maybe you would change your mind on this, on what I'd said, but he says, Detarius says, why does Brian feel like quarterbacks don't hit their mental peaks until 7 to 8 years in the league? That's when they seem to play the most consistent mental part of the game. Because I talked about Dak Prescott turned 29 on Friday, and you know, I had done some research and looked at some notes that said generally, like a lot of quarterbacks, most quarterbacks over the last 20 years, their age 29 season on, their passer rating is higher than their first several years. And just my own explanation before, you know, I let you jump in, is I think it's the arm does not deteriorate as fast as some of the other positions' traits, like speed and quickness and some of that. That's going to go downhill faster in your 30s than the arm strength, I feel like. And I think with quarterback being such a mental position and you've seen so much football and you gathering so much knowledge, I think around 30, 31, 32, that's when it all kind of harmonizes and goes, all right, you've still got, you know, big physical talent over here, and then now the mental part of the game, and it all comes together to be as strong of a player as you can be. But that's just my own explanation. I don't know what your thoughts are on it.
No, you know, it's funny because we got a discussion today on the G-Bag Nation, and that's where the question, I believe, is coming from, was the discussion. I just kind of felt like in year seven, we needed to be beyond the, well, Dak is still learning this, and Dak, you know, I kind of felt like that, man, if this is year two or three and you're starting to talk about, well, Dak is, you know, he needs to figure out this or figure out that. I get it. He's a really, really young guy. But, like, he's a veteran quarterback now. You know, and you're the things that you're, you know, I struggle because we still honestly are treating him like he's a second or third year guy. You know, and I'm thinking, well, how the hell does guys like, you know, Allen and Buffalo and these young quarterbacks, how do they look like that they're better and ready and, you know, and they're not, and they don't struggle with, you know, the side. I know it sounds confusing.
I totally get what you're saying.
But it's like,
but at the same time, there are the Bradys and the Breezes of the world who they played their most elite football by far into this time.
No question.
Breeze especially was a late bloomer.
I think Dak, because we got in a discussion today, physically, I think Dak is just as good as Josh Allen. Physically.
I think Allen's got a better arm, but yeah, I think.
But I'm saying, toughness, leadership,
yeah.
You know, all those intangibles. But why are we talking about Dak still trying to kind of figure things out? You know?
Yeah.
That I'm just saying. Like,
I guess for me, I thought he did figure it out in 19 and 20 in the first half of 21. And so I just write off the second half of last year to being, you know, getting in his head a little bit. And not that he hasn't figured it out. I think he just, he temporarily.
Do we treat him like he hasn't figured it out?
I mean, I don't. I don't. Yeah. I don't know if others do, but I think he's got a pretty good handle on things. I think you see, if you were to compare his games from 2016-17, if you just watched consecutively, here's a game from 16-17, I think you'd see, wow, that's not the same player.
Yeah.
And so I think he has figured out a lot. And I think pre-snap, we don't give him enough credit. I know some people like to criticize him post-snap. I think pre-snap, he's one of the better ones at recognizing where the mismatch is and you
see,
know, where
that's
to go with
it. Maybe it's because of me. I just expect more. But I think if you're in year seven, you need to have it figured out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think, but like I said, I think this is where quarterbacks about now, year 7-8 is where they start hitting their prime. And so if in theory, this would be where Dak would start showing that this is his prime and he's going to play better football than he ever has. Next question here from Andrew Amini. And this is an interesting one because I know this is something we've given Mike McCarthy credit for. Can the extra attention paid to avoid injuries by Mike McCarthy actually be causing them, i.e. not practicing enough, causing the body to not be ready to handle a full season? Just seems like we've had awful injury luck since he's been here.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Most healthiest team going into the playoffs last year, weren't they?
They were, but I mean, I think you look at in 2020, Tyron Smith got hurt to an extent that he hadn't before. I think that you look at Dak being hurt three different times. I think that's more kind of stuff there. I guess star injuries, we've had more of those. Maybe
Dak
not
got
injuries.
Hurt in training. Okay, let's go to Dak's injury.
The broken ankle, that's a fluke.
Okay, he was pulled down in a tackle. The defender, you know, boom, got Bradbury throws his body in the back of his ankles. Ankles get bent. Ankles get broke. That's it. Okay. The training camp.
Hurt on a Hail Mary drill.
Yeah, he was throwing the ball. Yeah, so that was.
I mean, you could say that was just, you know.
Is that unfortunate?
Yeah, I mean, you could say that's. Now, some people, I think, would argue that that was set up to happen because of how much he was working during the offseason.
I think that's what I'm saying, though, because I was talking to people and everybody.
Now, they do have a bad history of soft tissue injuries. Because Sean Lee for years, and then last year, they had three bad calf injuries that hurt him. Dak, Michael Gallup, and Randy Gregory. So, I mean, you may be able to point to some soft tissue stuff, but I don't know that that's because of McCarthy's management of injuries.
Yeah, I'm trying to think because the calf injury for Dak was the last throw of the New England game, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, he's throwing it. He comes down.
Comes down a little funny.
Awkwardly. Is that Mike McCarthy's fault or is that I'm having to make a play and I land funny kind of a thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe we could write it off to that. I think that's more.
Maybe I shouldn't be just focusing on Dak, but I also think Tyron Smith has some bad luck. I always say this about Tyron Smith. Somebody's fallen down in the pocket. How many times have we seen Tyron Smith have
the knee against Minnesota last
year
with that.
An ankle. Somebody falls in the back of his ankle or falls in the back of his knee and then he gets hurt, you know?
Yeah.
Are there other injuries that we feel like McCarthy's? I'm asking a question.
I'm scanning through my head some of the bigger injuries we've had. We had Trayvon Diggs break his foot. That was Jalen Smith playing a little reckless and out of control.
We had Tank broke a bone in his foot during a practice. Right.
Yep. That was just on a simple pass rush.
Yeah.
Look, I think if you want to look at anything and go, hey, that's not quite right, you can look at the soft tissue injuries. They've had issues with calves and hamstrings for years. And last year it all came together and they had three really big ones. But I don't know that that's so much about the workload at practice. That may be, you know, related to something different. I don't think McCarthy trying to, you know, pull their workload back would cause the soft tissue stuff.
But
I'm also not a doctor. I could be talking out of my ass.
No, you're not, because the trainers told me, and I asked this question about, I said, hey, how's McCarthy as far as caring about injuries and stuff? The trainers told me, he goes, by far the best coach we've ever had when it comes to caring about the players and how they're hurt or they're not hurt, or what's wrong with them, what do we need to do better, that kind of thing. These trainers swear by Mike McCarthy when it comes to having a team ready health-wise.
Yeah, and I think other players across the league who have played for Mike McCarthy would testify that he took care of my body.
Yeah.
He added years to my career.
Rod Marinelli has a history of working really, really, really hard at practice. And players that played defense for Rod Marinelli will tell you.
And they love Rod, but they will tell you.
Yeah, he works their ass
took
off.
Took years off of my career.
Yeah, exactly.
Back into my career.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they love him. And they don't fault him for it, but they will say, I remember one of the guys on the Cowboys defensive line told me, they're like, the games were easy because practices were just, we were run so hard.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, I don't think that we've had some key injuries. I don't know that there's been a ton of injuries, though. I think it's just been bad luck with who it's been. It's been a lot of specific big players. All right, Brian, that's it. We got two more episodes this week because we're doing three a week now.
There you go.
So we're going to be here watching these practices. Hopefully, like I said, Brian and I are going to try and run down who the heck this new receiver is going to be, because they're going to have to go out and get somebody. Dennis Houston can't be starting out there in week one. But, Brian, I appreciate it as always.
Yes, sir.
And we will talk to you guys again later this week.